It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Deborah Amos. The troubles at mortgage giants Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac aren't over, but investors in their stock seem a bit happier. Fannie Mae's shares went up more than 18% yesterday. Freddie Mac's gained 22%. The rise in share prices after last week's free fall comes as the administration has been lobbying Congress to support its rescue plan for the financially troubled mortgage giants. Some lawmakers are skeptical about the plan. One of them is the Republican senator from Alabama. Richard Shelby is the ranking Republican on the Senate Banking Committee. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Senator Shelby, you have been billed as one of the lawmakers who could derail the rescue plan. Why is that?
Well, that's just, I guess, press talk. I'm not interested in derailing anything that will bring some stability to our financial markets. But I have been in the past for 6-7 years been trying to shore up the capital, get a strong regulator for the government-sponsored enterprises we know as Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. The problem is we were not able to pass that legislation. It was thwarted by some of our friends on the other side of the aisle, and we're where we are today. If it were an ordinary situation, I would say, gosh, let it go belly up. If it can't make it and if it prospers, fine. But we created these organizations a long time ago to have the implicit backing of the United States of America, in other words, the taxpayer. This might be an approach that will work. It might not be, but it will probably bring some type of confidence back to the market that we're not going to let Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac go under.
Senator, I know that the Secretary of the Treasury came and spoke to you personally.
He did.
And did you make your arguments to him, and did he convince you that, as you often hear, too big to fail, and that this legislation is going to have to pass?
Well, I wouldn't say I'm totally convinced, but I'm convinced of one thing. We have a financial powder keg, and we do not want to light the fuse. I try to stay open-minded. By nature, I'm very skeptical of government interventions, but you can see what's happened to our banking system, most of it in the last year or so. And we got a problem on our hand.
In the long run, once this crisis of confidence is over and the housing markets stabilize, do you think it's possible to either totally privatize Freddie and Fannie or better to totally nationalize Freddie and Fannie?
Well, let's don't nationalize anything. That would be the last straw. But I think if we can pass in this legislation a strong, independent regulator, that's what we need.
Senator, help me understand something. I know that people throw around this word nationalize, and it's become a dirty word in this country. But what is the difference in having an open check backed by the government for this semi-private, semi-government company and having Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac be a government institution? I don't understand what the difference would be.
There is a difference now. It might be one of degree. But what they're talking about is credit, standby credit, for a limited period of time, as opposed to taking over the companies totally and owning them.
Senator, what is your bottom line? What do you have to see in this rescue package before you'll sign off?
Creating a strong regulator over Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac to shore up the capital to make sure they're well managed, might get into compensation. This might get into lobbying. Some assurance from the Treasury, the administration, and the Federal Reserve that this is of the utmost importance and this is going to be temporary in nature.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Senator Richard Shelby is the ranking Republican member on the Senate Banking Committee.
Let's examine more closely one phrase that Senator Shelby just said. He referred to shoring up the capital of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Capital is basically money on hand, a buffer against a company's losses. And as NPR's John Itzty reports, part of the concern over these two companies is that they've been required to have very little capital.
Right now, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have between $80 and $90 billion in capital. That sounds like a lot of money. The problem, says Christopher Whalen of the research firm Institutional Risk Analytics, is that the two mortgage giants have exposure to nearly $6 trillion of liabilities, almost all in the nation's shaky housing market.
If you were going to really adequately capitalize Fannie and Freddie, you'd have to go out and raise hundreds of billions of dollars. If they were a bank, they'd have $400 or $500 billion in capital to support $6 trillion in total footings. So that's why people are right to be concerned.
And it's why their share prices dropped into the single digits last week. Whalen says Fannie and Freddie shareholders were afraid that the company's meager capital would be wiped out as the housing market deteriorates and they'd be left with shares worth nothing. Whalen believes that is the scenario that will eventually play out, despite the strengthening of Fannie and Freddie share prices in the past couple of days.
The equity holders have my sympathy. If they can get a little pop this week and get out, you know, recover some of their scalp, they should do so. I would not want to see anyone sit with the equity of these two institutions because I think they're both going to be wiped out.
So why did Fannie and Freddie's government regulator allow them to have such low capital requirements, about a fifth of what's required of commercial banks? The answer, political power, says former Treasury Secretary Larry Summers.
It was more profitable for their shareholders to operate with low capital, and they had enormous political power in Congress and were able to persuade Congress to establish a capital regime that was very, very favorable to them. And the people who lent them money were prepared to accept the low level of capital because of the implicit government guarantee.
A guarantee that's become explicit this week. The model allowed Fannie and Freddie to take more risks and do it with money borrowed at very low interest rates because of the government's backing. That provided big rewards for shareholders and managers as long as home prices went up. A good deal for Fannie and Freddie, but a bad one for taxpayers, says Summers.
The problematic aspect of the structure from the beginning has been the privatization of gain. If the companies make profit, it goes to the shareholders. And the socialization of loss. If the company's not able to meet its obligation, then the government meets the obligation. And whenever you have the privatization of gain and the socialization of loss, you're going to have something that's very popular with the people who benefit from it, but very problematic from the point of view of the broader society.
The problem Fannie and Freddie face now is raising adequate capital to withstand the billions more in losses they're likely to face in the housing market. Chris Whalen says it will be impossible for them to find private investors willing to pour in the amount of money they need because of uncertainty about their future and the possibility they'll be nationalized once this crisis passes, something he says he supports. The Treasury's rescue plan for Fannie and Freddie would allow the government to buy equity in the companies. It would be an extraordinary move, but former Treasury Secretary Summers thinks it could happen.
I would not be surprised at all if the government found it necessary to make a substantial equity in investment, and I would hope and trust that if the government did find it necessary to make a substantial investment, at that point they would take over substantial control of the way in which the companies functioned.
Ultimately, Summers also thinks Fannie and Freddie's hybrid private-public structure should be done away with. Its public functions should be taken over by the government, he says, and its private functions should operate without government backing. John Itzty, NPR News, Washington.
And we have heard a response from the companies themselves. Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and their regulator all say the companies do have adequate capital to carry out their missions.
NPR's business news starts with a door to overseas tax shelters. The big Swiss bank UBS yesterday said it will stop offering its offshore banking services to American residents. The IRS has accused the bank of helping wealthy Americans dodge taxes and hiding what they were doing from the authorities. By one estimate, overseas tax havens cost the United States about $100 billion a year. Yesterday, U.S. lawmakers held a hearing on illegal tax shelters at foreign banks like UBS and another bank in the tiny European principality of Liechtenstein. NPR's Jim Zaroli has more.
As a private bank owned by the royal family of Liechtenstein, the LGT Group promises its wealthy clients discretion, respectability, and above all, secrecy. So it was a shock last February when an LGT executive named Heinrich Kieber left the country and began handing over the names of the bank's clients to tax authorities in Europe and the United States. Yesterday, the Senate Subcommittee on Investigations played an interview with Kieber. He talked about how the bank helped wealthy Americans avoid taxes by laundering their money through different countries.
The only purpose of all this is to make it extremely complicated for law enforcement agencies to follow the trail, as each step serves as a filter to hide the track of the client's money.
Kieber said he went to the bank's executives and told them he thought this kind of tax avoidance was illegal.
The answer was always the same. None of your business, just stick to your designated job.
Today, Kieber is wanted by Liechtenstein authorities for passing out business secrets and is in a witness protection program. Senate officials used Kieber's testimony to shine a light on the secretive world of foreign tax shelters. They said some foreign banks routinely use dummy corporations, shell companies, and trusts to help U.S. residents avoid taxes. Minnesota Senator Norm Coleman is the subcommittee's ranking minority member.
We got to close this down. As I said, you drive a Mack truck through the holes in this system, and there's a lot of money, Mr. Chairman, that's just, you know, not going down the drain. It's staying in people's pockets.
LGT officials have been interviewed by the subcommittee, but they refused to show up for the hearing. Three Americans accused of using shelters showed up, but took the fifth. Among those who did testify was an executive from UBS. Senate officials say the big Swiss bank aggressively sold tax shelters to wealthy Americans. UBS employees made repeated trips to the United States, sponsoring yachting races and art shows to attract rich people. The report said the employees entered the country as tourists and kept few notes while they were here in case they were apprehended by the IRS. Yesterday, Senator Coleman asked UBS executive Mark Branson whether UBS officials based in this country knew what was happening.
Who in the United States was aware that these client advisors from Switzerland were coming in for the purpose of soliciting business in violation of U.S. securities law?
I have no knowledge that anyone in the U.S. was aware.
Wouldn't anybody be asking a question? What are you doing here?
It may well be that they're not in the same geographic location.
Branson said UBS has taken steps to ensure that no more illegal activity occurs, and he said the company regrets any involvement it had with illegal tax shelters. Jim Zaroli, NPR News.
Europeans are feeling the American economic slowdown, but while the biggest worry here is home prices, for Europeans the biggest problem is inflation. From Paris, Eleanor Beardsley reports.
Last month, French inflation hit an 18-year high, taking the price of basic foods and commodities with it. Now, even buying fruits and vegetables at a street market has become a tricky business, says Parisian Brigitte Rose.
Particularly this year, all the fruits and legumes have become very expensive.
This year is the worst I've seen, says Rose. To afford things, you have to look for deals in several markets and play the competition off against each other. 2 weeks ago, the European Central Bank raised interest rates for the first time in more than a year to keep inflation at bay. French economist Elie Cohen says that's Europe's main problem, not an economic downturn like in the U.S.
The situation is quite different in Europe. You know, we don't have the subprime crisis. Of course, we bought some financial products from the U.S., but we don't have a massive effect on all the building sector, as you can see it in the U.S.
Cohen admits that food prices are going up, but he says that's directly linked to the price of crude oil. Core inflation, that is, inflation not related to external factors and thus a better economic measure, is still at a low 2%.
We don't see this cumulative process where prices are driving wages, wages are driving prices, etc., etc. We are not in this kind of mood.
Cohen believes inflation will come down if and when oil prices drop. Things may be difficult here, he says, but Europe is far from a recession. For NPR News, I'm Eleanor Beardsley in Paris.